Tomorrow's Wall Street Titan might be an AI bot. 40% of all open job roles in finance today are for AI-related hires, and almost half of firms cite AI as a way to improve customer experiences. Find out more about the impact of AI on finance later in the podcast.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher-level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.
You run the biggest bank in the world. You have our money. You've got world leaders on speed dial. That's a lot of power. How do you decide when and how to wield that power?
Yeah, I'm not sure I have a lot of people on speed dial. So you say all that, sometimes I think I'm just riding the Bronco and hanging on for dear life.
I'm Emily Chang, and this is The Circuit. We're coming to you from London on a bustling Monday morning, where I'm heading to sit down with one of the titans of banking.
You have a lot of folks from Bloomberg here.
This is the Jamie Dimon treatment.
Exactly.
Jamie Dimon is an institution, head of the largest bank in the world, JP Morgan Chase. He's got a knack for whipping companies into shape and cleaning up balance sheets. And in an era where multiple banks have failed or almost failed, Dimon has come to the rescue. He ascended to the top of JP Morgan as a successful dealmaker and leader with some hot takes along the way.
I could care less what Bitcoin trades for, how it trades, why it trades, who trades it. If you're stupid enough to buy it, you'll pay the price for it one day.
I wanted to learn more about the man behind the banker, to hear more about his philosophy, outlook on the world, and just how he does it. Joining me on this edition of The Circuit, JP Morgan CEO and chair, Jamie Dimon.
So you're on the road how often?
Actually, we checked last year, it was like 120 nights or something like that. Some of it's COVID catch-up. Mm. I feel like I need to visit people.
Right. Do you have any travel hacks?
What does that mean?
You know, ways to make your life easier. Yes.
Well, I try. When I land, when I exercise, when I eat, when I don't get tortured by people. Where are you from?
I'm from Hawaii originally.
Hawaii.
Yeah.
And married?
Married.
Children?
4 kids.
Holy moly.
Yeah. How do you do it?
What do you mean?
How did you juggle it all?
I pretty much had a binary life. I worked and family. Mm-hmm. So you didn't see me in black ties and red carpets and very rare stuff like that. So big family life.
I've heard you're a family man.
Yeah.
I like the Christmas card, by the way.
My wife does all that. That's.
I'm super into it. I do a family Christmas card
every year.
And of
course, the girls all get involved in what picture she could put in. Because they all look at how they looked. Of course, I put in whatever you want. And how old are your kids?
I have 3 boys and a girl, 11, 8, 6. 4. The ages change every year, so I have to remind myself. Yeah. How about you?
Do you remember their names?
Yes, I do remember their names.
I'm kidding.
How old are your daughters now?
38, 36, 34, and 7 grandkids, 6 girls, and finally a boy.
Do you babysit?
Yeah. My wife does more than I do, but I do. We do it together. They come over, sleepovers, and all that kind of stuff.
Any parenting advice?
Just love them.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You know, I thought I would mourn the loss of their youth as they got older, but it gets more fun
in a way.
Like,
once they start talking and arguing, defiant little things.
They're more sophisticated. Yeah. They're like in on the joke.
You could take them to restaurants without worried about if all the neighbors get mad at you. Yeah.
So what do you like to do with your daughters now?
Well, everything. We barbecue, we eat, we go to restaurants, we travel, we listen to music, we do wine. I love my son-in-laws.
I'm very lucky to meet Jamie Dimon as your future father-in-law.
They have no problem.
I'd be shaking
and
in my boots.
God knows if I ever say something where I'm wrong, they correct me just like they like finding me wrong about something.
Well, I love hearing how people do it, so I think that's helpful, moms and dads, you know?
I tell all the people at JP Morgan, everyone should take care on their own, their mind, their body, their spirit, their soul, their friends, their family, their health. Mm-hmm. They have to do that. It's part of their life. Mm-hmm. If you mess that up, you know, it makes everything else particularly hard, so... I heard a great speech from a woman once who said, you can have it all, you just can have it all at the same time.
You know, I like that advice. Yeah. You grew up talking finance at the kitchen table as a kid. Mm. What was it like growing up Jamie Dimon? Like, what do you think prepared you for all this?
Well, I grew up in Jackson Heights, Queens, and my grandparents, 3 were Greek immigrants. One was born here. I don't think any of the 4 finished high school. It was a loud table, people arguing and stuff like that. But my dad was a stockbroker. You know, I was the only one who took interest in that, reading the paper, understanding it. I bought a stock when I was 12, 13, or 14. You know, they didn't ask us to go into finance. So my older brother's a physicist, you know, University of Chicago, PhD, Niels Bohr Institute in Denmark for 10 or 12 years, IBM Labs, et cetera. And my other brother's a teacher. And so it was basically do the best you can, make the world a better place, treat everyone with respect, have a purpose in life. It was more around that. But a lot of intellectual debate at the table.
So going a little bigger picture now, you run the biggest bank in the world. You have our money. You've got world leaders on speed dial. That's a lot of power. How do you decide when and how to wield that power?
Yeah, I'm not sure I have a lot of people on speed dial. So you say all that. Sometimes I think I'm just riding the Bronco and hanging on for dear life. I love what I do. I try to talk to everyone. I try to keep my mind open. One of the benefits from traveling the world, you know, I was just in Mumbai and Switzerland and seeing clients, you learn a lot. And you try to make sure you're doing a proper assessment of the world, that you're looking at the options. You're not like just saying, we're going to do this. I look at it as part of our job to try to help countries do the best they can for their citizens. Mm-hmm. So we bank countries. We also advise them on skills and trade and economics. You look at our research, which is extraordinary. It's a lot around how does an economy run? So when you go to when I got back from Mumbai, we research 150 companies now or something like that. When I first went there in 05, maybe we did 20 companies, you know, and so we're educating the world about those companies. We're educating the world about the Indian economy. As we do that, we also educate the Indians about what works in their economy and what doesn't work. And those are important things to lift up society.
You've got this reputation as a sort of white knight for the economy. Do you ever feel pressure to come in with the save?
No. I feel a tremendous amount of pressure to do. Obviously, my family comes first, okay? But to do a great job for my company and our clients. I travel around. Also, it's hugely rewarding for me that we've lifted people up. We've done a good job. But I also feel a huge burden to do a good job for my country. So, you know, when my country wants me to do something, and we talk all the time to the senators and regulators, what can we do to make the system better, to lift up the country, lift up inner cities? We do a lot of work in inner cities and, you know, on work skills. We do a lot of work on health, equity. We're trying to figure out how to make society better. And I do consider that part of our job, because if we can lift up society, that's better for everybody. And so, yeah, I do feel pressure to do that. I look at that as part of my job. I think about 10 years ago, I said government is a line of business for us. And I meant it in multiple different ways, that we have to have the time, the effort, you know, the manpower. A lot of our people go all the time now to make sure we are properly engaged with the government around the world.
You've built a bank that's $4 trillion in assets and counting. How big is too big?
I think the question is what works for consumers and industries and stuff like that. So, you know, if you want to build a Boeing aircraft, you have to be big. You can pretend that you don't. If you want to do what J.P. Morgan does, we move $10 trillion of money around the world every day. We bank some of these companies in 30 countries. We bank countries. We bank the World Bank, the IMF. We bank the United States government. You have to be big. You can't do those things and be small. I applaud the small banks. We're the biggest bank, community banks and regional banks and stuff like that. And I understand some of the stress they're under. We're trying to help. So it's not either or.
JP Morgan's tech footprint has gotten even bigger now that we've seen clients flood out of SVB. You bought First Republic. How big is the opportunity to be the new incumbent bank for startups and VCs? And how will you, Jamie Dimon, manage the risk differently?
Yeah. I think, first of all, we didn't want to benefit in the world by that kind of thing happening. So it wasn't good for banks or good for us. Having said that, when that happened, you know, we had people working around the clock, literally, to open those accounts. I recently came from a Sequoia thing. I know a lot of the venture capitalists, you know, Saturday, Sundays, through the night to onboard these accounts and help them through it. And we always were there. We always did okay. I always wanted to do better. We're adding people. I think the biggest difference in Silicon Valley Bank, before I get to First Republic, is they did a great job at some of the stuff. Mm. So obviously there's certain things they did on a macro level which weren't right. They did a lot of things on the micro level that were right. How they dealt with the client, how they serviced them, they serviced them locally. So we have unbelievable products and services to bring to them. Digital, consumer, subscription lines, financing, globality, research, you name it. But we have to deliver it to them in a way they actually like it and they want it, which is what Silicon Valley Bank did. So we're organizing around it. We just took out a whole bunch of new space in Palo Alto. We hired John Cheney as one of the top people out of Silicon Valley Bank, organized around the innovation economy. We'll get it right. I just want to make sure they're happy with us a year from now, mm-hmm. not just today.
But what about managing the risk?
That's what we do all day long. For us, it's incremental risk. It's a slightly different kind of risk. So, you know, and this happened years ago, would a bank lend to a non-revenue company? Well, the answer, you know, 20 years ago was zero, but we did Facebook. Mm-hmm. So we've learned how you can do that, when you do that. But again, the risk is, it's not the risk, it's the venture capital company, it's the venture capital partners, it's the investee companies, it's the investee companies' managements, it's that whole ecosystem. And so we're just organizing around it.
The financial crisis, the implosion of SVB, and the recent banking crisis. What's the lesson you take from those?
In terms of crises?
Yeah.
You know, going way back, I used to do a presentation on financial crises, you know, going back to those blow-ups in Ginnie Mae's, Penn Central, commercial paper, the 87 crash, the 90 recession, the 74 recession. And if you make a list of all those things, you realize, and I'm not making fun of them, they happen all the time. And the best preparation is, in our business, capital and liquidity, which Dodd-Frank improved. We already had a lot. Be prepared. You can't be prepared after the fact. You got to be prepared before the fact. So when I talk about risk management, it's always about the range of outcomes. Can we handle them? You know, one of the things I criticize about the stress test, it's one test. We do 100 a week. Okay, I'm not worried about the one test. And beyond that, we talk about geopolitical crises, cyber. You got to be prepared for that stuff. And it does happen, and it's going to surprise you one day. Just like, will I be surprised if oil goes to 150? I will not. It can easily happen if a bunch of factors fall a certain way. So the best thing is be prepared. For any business, when you think about risk, think about things that can go terribly wrong. Can you survive them? You know, it could be technology. It could be government regulations. It could be literally the weather. If you're a restaurant, you know, that might close you down. If you lose this week's business, you're out of business, you don't have enough cash. So you should think all that through.
Connecting human-led responsible AI with rich data sets is driving financial innovation in new and unexpected ways. Imagine a bank that uses AI to help detect fraud, or a personalized financial planning tool that knows when you want to retire and where. Pretty amazing, right? But financial services companies need a secure and resilient network to support AI architecture. With the Next Level Network from AT&T Business, AI data travels at low latency through reliable, fast connectivity, so financial leaders can focus on what matters most, a better future for their businesses and their customers. Learn about connected solutions from AT&T Business at att.com/y-att-business.
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at BloombergLive.com/AI/radio.
Where's China on the list of risks?
When I say geopolitical, that's the big one. It's the thread from Ukraine, oil and gas, food, migration, all our relationships, the most important one being China. That is the most important for the future of the world. And obviously, Ukraine is affecting it. And in fact, it's very hard to see really positive outcomes with China until the Ukraine war is resolved. Hopefully, where the Ukrainians can say they have a victory of some sort.
You've said you're worried about another Trump presidency. How worried?
I don't know if I've said that. I'm hoping the American public, we need good American leadership. And I think that we need to explain to people why they're so important for the world. You know, and so there's a little bit of this, you know, America first, and no American president is going to say America second. But what we need to explain is why Ukraine is important to us and why American security relies on global security and why our allies rely on that. And if they can't rely on America, they will have to rely on someone else. And so I just think it's very important. You know, Bob Gates writes in his book, The Exercise of Power, about the symphony of power. And all the soft things, not the military, which we've overused, but diplomacy, development finance, education, communication, obviously economic, trade, investment, all those things. And I think we need a better job in that.
Given we're in London, you don't see the same wealth of tech companies that you see in Silicon Valley. They want more big star tech companies here. Why haven't we seen that?
I'd look at it the other way around. U.S. was the center of tech, you know, not just Silicon Valley. It's all over America. I recently came from Boise and other places. It's staggering. But so the diaspora has actually moved overseas. I was recently in Berlin and Paris. There are tech startups everywhere now. They're quite good. They're more of a going public. You know, and we're the leader of taking them public here. So I think it's a great thing. And obviously, you've always had it in China, a little bit in India. Still, in Europe, it's not quite like the United States, but the fact that it's here is a very good thing.
So we saw a few tech companies go public. What's happening in the markets? Are we back, or is this a blip?
I think it's open for now, you know, for different types of companies. But, you know, you see IPO markets like an accordion. I think there were like 400-plus deals in 21 and 40 in 22, and I think something like 50 or 60 this year. Now, obviously, interest rates change a lot, how people value it, whether they want to go public, the value of cash flows, or earnings and cash counts a little bit more than it counted before. But for now, it's open. Markets are healthy. You know, the economy is still okay. So it's open. Maybe not for everybody, but it's open.
The biggest tech companies prop up a huge chunk of the S&P. Is big tech too big to fail?
I think that's a too broad a question. You know, I think in any industry, you say too big to fail, which I've lost touch with what that really means anymore, because remember, car companies were bailed out, and these things were bailed out, and I don't understand. They should ask what they want. If the regulators don't want a bank to ever fail again, then we should do A, B, C, D, and E, if that's the goal. I didn't think that was the goal. I think Dodd-Frank actually accomplished most of the goals, which is dramatically reduce the risk, create liquidity, capital, stuff like that. So, and big tech, you got to be very specific. You know, sometimes companies misuse their position, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes regulators capture it, and sometimes they don't. But they're powerful, you know, and we have to deal with that. I've been writing about big tech going to our business. We got fintech, but we also have big tech. And they will embed payment systems in there. And some are going to white label banks, kind of what Apple did. You know, they have the right to do that. I'm not against that. I would be against unfair use of their position to dominate us in a business.
Bill Gates once said,
banks are dinosaurs, yeah.
He said, banking is necessary. Banks are not. To what extent could AI or fintech replace traditional banks?
So I think, first of all, I remember him saying banks are dinosaurs. I spoke to him about it in 1997. And he was dead wrong. He probably agreed to that. But he's not wrong. You know, we spoke earlier that technology changes everything. And if anyone is complacent or arrogant or think that because you have a big position today, you can have a big position tomorrow, that's a mistake. Then you have to define, what is banking? Someone's going to have to hold the money. Someone's going to have to move the money. Someone's going to have to raise the money. Someone's going to have to do research around money. Those services will still be around. And hopefully we're doing it and using a lot of tech to do a better job at it. But I've always thought it's very possible that some tech thing, you know, disintermediates a piece of that. And I've been quite public. Stripe did that with part of our payment system. We're still very good. PayPal did that with some of their stuff, you know, I mean, Square, PayPal. So I want my own people to be cognizant. Yeah, we have competitors coming from different angles who, you know, want a piece of our business. And we're perfectly willing to compete, and we're quite comfortable we're going to do okay.
Well, Apple is going deeper into financial services.
No
do you
question.
Worry about the Bank of Apple?
I wrote about it. I wrote about it like 5 years ago.
You know, well, how worried
like,
are you now?
Like, what is a bank? Well, we're going to compete. So they have a tough competitor, but you know, they hold money, move money. You could put money in a basically, you know, markets, but it's a white labeled checking account, credit card, you know, all these things. Yeah, they're a form of a competitor. You know, we also partner with them, but I'm very used to partnering and competing with lots of people.
Existential threat?
I don't think it's an existential threat, but I think if we were complacent about it, yes.
I know you mentioned ChatGPT. Have you tried it?
Yeah. If I had my phone, I'd show you.
What do you use it for?
I just ask it questions.
Like what?
No, I don't remember. What's Emily Chang going to ask me?
Did it give you any good answers?
Yeah, about tech.
What in tech are you most excited about?
First of all, tech is not new. I mean, tech has been changing the world for thousands of years, all different types. And my whole life, you know, they invented mainframes and computers and minis and GPUs and internet and phones and things like that. They've all been exciting. They've all changed everything we do. You know, obviously, the latest thing is it's cloud, digital, and AI, and it's all real.
Yeah.
And so...
You think it's all real?
Absolutely. I mean, look, you look at your phone, what it does today that it didn't do 10 years ago, how it's LinkedIn, et cetera. And a cloud brings unbelievably compute and power and elastics and analytics. And AI is what people say it's going to be. It's going to grow dramatically over time. So we're kind of at the tip of the iceberg.
You've got a top-notch group investigating AI. What are they up to? What's the next level of finance you think AI can unlock?
Yeah. So I think the most important thing is that AI is real. We already have thousands of people doing it. Top scientists around the world, Manuel Velosa, who ran Carnegie Mellon Machine Learning. And it's a living, breathing thing. So people want an answer. What's it going to do? It's a living, breathing thing. It's going to change. There are going to be all different types of models and different types of tools and technology. But the way to think about it for us is every single process So errors, trading, hedging, research, every app, every database, you're going to be applying AI. So it might be as a co-pilot. It might be to replace humans. Like, you know, AI is doing all the equity hedging for us for the most part. It's idea generation. It's large language models. It's note-taking while you're talking to someone. And while it's taking notes, it may actually say to you that, you know, here's the thing of interest the client might be interested in. All error, all customer service. It's a little bit of everything.
But it is going to replace some jobs.
Of course, yeah. But look, folks, people have to take a deep breath, okay? Technology's always replaced jobs. Your children can live to 100 and not have cancer because of technology. And literally, they'll probably be working 3.5 days a week. So technology's done unbelievable things for mankind. But, you know, planes crash, pharmaceuticals get misused. There are negatives. This one, the biggest negative, in my view, is AI being used by bad people to do bad things. Think of cyber warfare. And I do think, you know, eventually have legal guardrails around it. It's kind of hard to do because it's new. But it will add a huge value. And, you know, for J.P. Morgan, if it replaces jobs, you know, we hope to redeploy people. Like at First Republic, you know, we've offered jobs to like 90% of the people. They accepted. But we also, you know, we've told them as we some of those jobs are transitory, but we hire 30,000 people a year. Right. So we expect to be able to get them a job somewhere local in a different branch or a different function if we can do that. And we'll be doing that with any dislocation that takes place as a result of AI.
So is there going to be a point where I can turn to ChatGPT and say, I have 30 years or I want to get rich quick. What should I do with my money?
Well, the rich quick, I hope it tells you that you're crazy. But we, in some ways, can do a little bit already today. And, you know, usually if you look at like wealth plans that we have, which I think are quite good, they have a lot of AI embedded in that or analytics embedded in that. And as soon it'll have more AI. All that AI is going to do is know more about you, learn more about you, look at patterns and, you know, look at successful things in the past. And yeah, so AI will be a huge aid to things like that. But I really wonder if one day AI can't be a stock picker. Because if it makes, just make believe AI picked every stock, then every stock is perfectly priced. And I would even AI think, well, can't get that done right.
Interesting. So do you see like a finance super app in our future or, you know, a world where we could put our money on autopilot?
Yeah, you already have that a little bit. So 10 years ago, I took all of our, maybe it's 8 years ago, the people who ran retail, Gordon Smith and a whole team, I said, you're getting an airplane and you're going to China. And they said, why? We're American. I said, go to China. You know, and they went to Ping An and Tencent and WeChat and Alipay and all that. And they had all the super apps. I made them come back and do a big chart of super apps, all the services they do. So I think in America, it won't be a super app. It'll be, I'm going to call them mini super apps. So you might, like, you can already do a lot of stuff with us around money, but that's why we do travel. It's an adjacency. Like your credit card, and this is what the tech folks did a very good job thinking about, Stripe. They didn't say you just want to swipe the card and process the payment. You also want to give the customer data. You want to make it easier. Give them an API so you can embed it directly in their software. That was very smart. So we're trying to do that too. So it's not just the credit card. Now we want to offer you great travel and great hotels and great restaurants. And so there are all these adjacencies on everything we do that are tech driven and will be increasingly AI driven. So think of anything we offer you will be driven a lot by AI.
Connecting human-led responsible AI with rich data sets is driving innovation in new and unexpected ways. But financial services companies need a secure and resilient network to support AI architecture. With the Next Level Network from AT&T Business, AI data travels at low latency through reliable, fast connectivity. So financial leaders can focus on what matters most, a better future for their businesses and their customers. Learn about connected solutions from AT&T Business at att.com/y-att-business.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
You're revered for your long-term view, so I'd just like to tick through a few topics quickly and get a quick sort of one-sentence long-term view. What's your long view on China?
It'll be okay, but we need really good American leadership to do that. And don't worry, they're not a 10-foot giant. They have a lot of issues. America's got a lot of strains. I like the fact the American government's talking to them constantly now.
Crypto.
If you mean crypto like Bitcoin, I've always said it's a fraud.
No hope for it.
Well, if they think they're a currency, there's no hope for it. It's a Ponzi scheme. It's a public, decentralized Ponzi. If it's a crypto coin that can do something, like, you know, a smart contract, that has value. There will be smart contracts, and blockchain works. So to the extent crypto is accessing certain blockchain things, yeah, that might have some value.
American leadership.
The most important thing for the world in the next 100 years.
Is it going to work out? Are we going to be okay?
America, you know, Warren Buffett would tell you, one of the great things about America is our constant resiliency, ability to adjust. I mean, we adjusted pretty quickly to bad COVID and then getting out of COVID, and American leadership moves pretty quickly, and autocratic leadership gets stasis. So you got to look at, yeah, sometimes democracy is messy, but it also allows change.
Jamie Dimon's legacy.
Just, I hope I made the world a better place.
You're sure you're not running for office?
I'm pretty sure.
I just spoke to some friends who left the U.S. who said if you ran, they'd come back.
I got four more votes.
What about AI? Could that be weaponized?
Yeah.
And, you know, what's your biggest AI fear?
Well, I think Henry Kissinger, Eric Schmidt wrote a book about, you know, if it gets used in weapons. And that obviously could be terrifying if it's deciding who the enemy is. Obviously, it's going to be used in cyber. So I put cybers, you know, I think JP Morgan is unbelievable. We got great people in constant contact with the government. They would tell you we're very good at it. It is really complicated. And AI will be used to breach, you know, through cyber. And so bad guys will use AI. And I think we need guardrails. No one knows exactly what they should be yet. But it's not going to stop bad guys. So we got to think through the guardrails here. You want to have plenty of innovation. You need guardrails, like, you know, maybe it'll tell you at the bottom of something this is generated by AI, but the bad guys still use it. I'm a little concerned about that. But we're going to use it to help our customers and our business.
When you look back on your career, what stands out to you as sort of the top defining moments, like top three?
Oh, God.
I know, it's tough.
There is no particular one because, you know, other people are going to write it. And they look at successes and failures and stuff like that. So, again, most important, family. Mm-hmm. And I have three wonderful kids, two wonderful son-in-laws, seven great grandkids. That is the most important. Mm-hmm. You know, second most important is my country, the United States of America. I'm a red-blooded, full-throated, free enterprise American patriot. And don't misunderstand that. And so therefore, that is a big effort of mine personally. And my company stands behind that to the extent we should. And then inside the company, I just hope people say, you know, we're going to miss the son of a bitch when he's gone. And he made the world a better place, and he created opportunity and for all of us and our clients.
What advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
It's the same advice. You know, like, you have to work hard. I mean, but work smart. You know, a lot of people, they waste so much time, and they don't think carefully. And there's that great quote, "I'm sorry I wrote you such a long letter. I didn't have time to write a short one." That's respect to people. You know, you get your thoughts together. Have a process in place for decision-making. Don't allow yourself to become weaponized. To the extent you have a temper, it works against you. You always have to end up apologizing. Have a thought process around things that are complicated, and you'll get better over life. You don't have to answer everything all at once.
What else do you want to accomplish in the world, aside from making your bank succeed?
I would like to do the best I can for the world and my country while I'm around.
Well, we appreciate you doing your best for us today. Jamie, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Emily, thank you. Good luck to everybody.
Thanks so much for listening to this podcast edition of The Circuit. And if you want to watch my conversation with Jamie Dimon and my trip to London, just check out the full video episode. I'm Emily Chang. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Emily Chang TV. You can watch new episodes of The Circuit on Bloomberg Television or on demand by downloading the Bloomberg app to your smart TV. And check out other Bloomberg podcasts on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartMedia app, or wherever you listen to your shows. And let us know what you think by leaving us a review. I'm your host and executive producer. Our senior producers are Lauren Ellis and Alan Jeffries. Our associate producer is Tyler Cota. Our editor is Allison Casey. Thanks so much for listening.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher-level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.